It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
We are 10 days away from Broncos training camp. What are the 10 biggest questions we hope to get answered? We've gone through five of them with our good friend Troy Rank, who is filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Troy, let's get to question number five. And if, by the way, if you missed any of that conversation, you could access all of our content on demand through the 104.3 The Fan app. Super user-friendly. Use it every day. If you don't have it, get it. Question number five as we head into camp, Troy. Who will reveal themselves as the third leading receiver? This is in the top half of the top 10 questions because it is so essential for the Denver Broncos. You look at who the third leading receiver was just a year ago. It's Benny Fowler with 350 yards, 29 receptions. That cannot stay the same. Who emerges as that third guy?
Well, if the offense establishes itself like it can and it maximizes its potential, it'll be Jake Butt for me. 35, 40 catches, 450 yards, four or five touchdowns. If he's the threat in the middle of the field that I believe he can be, then he would be the third receiver. After that, I mean, I think it would be Deshaun Hamilton is the sneaky pick because he will have a quicker path onto the field. Even though Cortland Sutton's talent is breathtaking, I'm not sure how they get him on the field consistently playing behind Demaryius, whereas Hamilton as a slot guy, there's a quicker path to the field right now. But I think the third receiver at the end of the year, if things have gone right, will be Jake Butt. And if you go back and watch how Case Keenum used Kyle Rudolph with the Vikings, that's another reason. I went back and watched a bunch of film the last few days. I'm just saying, Keenum liked his tight end, especially in the red zone.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be Jake Butt, 35 catches, 40 catches, 450 yards, four to five scores.
You know, with Case, he loves the middle of the football field. He really thrives there. And if you look at his numbers, and Alfred and D-Mac went through it a couple weeks ago, his numbers in the middle of the football field when it comes to like passer rating is 30% higher than the NFL average. I mean, it is significant.
He's accurate. That's why. I mean, he throws a real accurate ball.
He does. And it was actually, I believe it was Jake Butt who actually said it's the most catchable ball he's ever been thrown after working with Case through OTAs and minicamp. And you're right. You look at Kyle Rudolph last year and the way Case Keenum used him. Kyle Rudolph wasn't, you know, a 1,000-yard receiver. You know, we don't need Jake Butt or Fumagalli to be Gronk or Travis Kelce. But Rudolph was 532 receiving yards. If we could get that from whether it's Jake Butt or even Deshaun Hamilton, and I think that might be setting the bar a little too high for Hamilton, but we'll see. But when it comes to the tight ends aside, Troy, when it comes to just the receivers, could Carlos Henderson or Isaiah McKenzie challenge a guy like Deshaun Hamilton to play that slot? Or in your mind, is it already sort of, is Deshaun the plan? Is Deshaun Hamilton the plan at the slot? Or could that be challenged?
No, it could be challenged because you just don't know. I mean, Deshaun Hamilton, I mean, I've joked and say he takes better routes than Google Maps. I mean, the guy is precise. He gets it.
He is.
He's smart. But he has to do it. And now training camp is now the separator. We saw a lot of intriguing things from this rookie class. But to evaluate running backs without pads on is virtually impossible. Evaluate slot receivers, you know, where there's going to be contact now with pads on, that's impossible without pads on. So, I mean, I like Deshaun Hamilton's chances of getting on the field. Maybe Carlos Henderson figures it out in year two. I mean, he was in danger for me last year of getting cut. Now, he wouldn't have, but the finger issue was perfect timing for him because he was not getting the offense last year.
He wasn't.
I'm talking about balls were bouncing off his face mask, off his helmet. Like, he wasn't understanding the offense. He's had a rookie year where he's redshirted, essentially. Maybe he shows up and plays well, but he didn't have a great offseason. He was hurt. He got arrested. And Vance Joseph, who rarely ever calls players out, essentially said of Carlos Henderson last month, he's got to make the team. So he's got to have a nice camp. McKenzie, they're more bullish on because they see that slippery talent. I still think they have visions of a Tyreek Hill light, which I think is unfair to the kid. Tyreek Hill is a unique player in every way. And I don't see that from McKenzie, frankly.
I was going to say, I don't see them in the same.
I don't either, other than, you know, they're both small and fast, but Tyreek Hill is like Olympic fast. He's different. But Isaiah McKenzie's in the mix. And as a slot receiver, it would be intriguing if you could get him involved in space. How would that look? But again, he's got to earn it. Earn it, earn it, earn it. And if he earns it, fine. I'm not rooting against anyone here. It is a competition. I'm just saying, if you're Henderson and McKenzie, you better bring your A game in terms of being in the playbook, because I guarantee you Deshaun Hamilton is. He's going to show up and you're going to go, man, that's not a rookie out there. He's going to know the playbook. I guarantee you preparation is going to be one of his strengths. So if you're a young guy competing for that position, do it. But here's what, and I looked up Rudolph, and you said 57 receptions, 532 yards, 8 touchdowns.
Mm.
Again, if Jake Buck could be,
number.
If he could go 40 for 450 and 5 touchdowns, I would take that.
Yeah, there's no question.
I would
question.
Take that if I'm the Broncos.
Troy Reich filling in for Brandon Stokely today. We're 10 days away from training camp, counting down the 10 biggest questions we hope to get answered. Question number 4. Does Joe Woods have what it takes? Before we start this conversation, I want you to hear a clip from our very own DMAC from about 48 hours ago talking about the Broncos' D coordinator.
So now I'm agreeing with Akib because Joe Woods is a terrible defensive coordinator, which is true. But that's also the guy who used to be your cornerbacks coach. That was your position coach, Joe Woods. So you don't like Joe Wood. That's what I get from that, Chad. I don't like Joe Wood.
Sounds like a guy just trashing people as he leaves town.
Now, this is... I don't like Joe Woods as a defensive coordinator, Chad. He's not good.
They finished decently in defense last year.
Yeah, but Joe Woods does not know what he's doing. He's not a good DC. It was his first year doing it. Maybe he gets better this year. He was bad last year.
Joe Woods was bad, doesn't know what he's doing, bad D coordinator. DMAC never won to mince words. Can Joe Woods figure this out? Well, first of all, before I hit you with that, Troy, was Joe Woods as bad as DMAC suggests?
He had games that were that bad, and they got outclassed against the Chiefs, Eagles, and Patriots, where his inexperience showed up. The game got fast on him. I mean, the Eagles game was the prime example, where they were just constantly reactionary. The Eagles looked like Oregon when Chip Kelly first got there.
Yeah.
Teams are like, where are they at? Where are they coming from? Where's the ball going? And you look up and you give up 51 points and you won the Super Bowl a couple years ago. That was an embarrassing day all around.
The Dolphins game, too, kind of showed up a little bit.
Right. There was games where the game got fast on Joe Woods. I think overall, I would give him probably a C. I don't think he was terrible because I think he did get better. Joe Woods knows football. He's a film rat. The guys respect him. But remember, he went from position coach to coordinator. He'd never been a coordinator before. And John Elway talked with Vance Joseph about a lot of – he was drinking out of a fire hose. That it was all coming fast at these guys in every way. So as you do self-evaluation, you ask players to do it, certainly. Vance Joseph, it starts with him. But Joe Woods has to. And how can he make the game, how can he coach faster? Is that simplifying the game plan? Atib Talib said he simplified it already, which that's not the sense I got during the year. I got the sense that guys were a little mad at the way they got a little zone happy and got away from some of their strengths. So I expect Joe Woods in year two to play to this player's strengths more and just keep it simple. Like we don't need 50 things we do okay. Let's do 15 things really well. So I think that's his key to getting better this year. Do what you do well, repeat it over and over, and don't be reactionary. But I don't think he was terrible last year, but I think in a moment you'd grade it as a C, somewhere between C-, because they had three, four games where they were embarrassed defensively. They were embarrassed.
We are 10 days away from training camp, counting down the 10 biggest questions we hope to get answered. We have counted down 10 through 7. The three biggest questions are left. We will table this until 2:40 when we will count down the three biggest questions in training camp. 2:40. If you need to set your alarm, do so. But, Troy, got to mention this. We need to help our guy Stoke out.
Uh-oh.
Guy Stoke needs some help. Heard from a little birdie that Stoke is in second place in the illegal burger contest. He's going up against Stink and Pritch, okay? Stokes in second place. I heard that. We need you guys' help. Look at the burgers. Head over to 1043thefan.com and vote for my guy, our guy, Brandon Stokely. Do not vote for Mark Schlereth in the morning. Do not support Pritch. Don't do it. Vote for the Stokely at 1043thefan.com. Once again, we'll go through those three biggest questions heading into training camp at 2:40. But first, Troy, have the Broncos been disrespected nationally again? We'll go into it next. Man, we were just having a hilarious conversation during a break, which a lot of times, and I've said this out loud, I wish, and you'd have to edit it pretty good, but I wish that, you know, our conversations during the breaks could become part of the show. And we were just having a spontaneous, as Raj Sharon, our executive producer, really out of nowhere started talking about the Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling. And do you have four names to offer, Troy Rank? Mount Rushmore pro wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, again, I was into pro wrestling in the 80s. I saw Hulk Hogan wrestle King Kong Bundy, Big John Studd. I saw Andre the Giant to this day. I mean, I still remember the side. We ran down to ringside, saw Andre the Giant. British Bulldogs, those are my guys.
Love the British Bulldogs.
Let's not get into the steroid issues with all these probably aforementioned players.
Of course.
Yes, I mean, for me, because I don't trace back to like the days of Gorilla Monsoon. And
sure.
You know, those, so Hulk Hogan has to be on it. He turned it into a national sport. It was on Sports Illustrated.
So I read Sports Illustrated. MTV.
It was. I mean, he was everywhere.
Yeah,
Hulkamania was running wild.
It was running wild.
He wasn't. When you go back, he wasn't an exciting wrestler.
No.
Everything else from the cheesy songs and the look and the 24-inch bicep. I mean, he was
24-inch pythons.
Pythons.
Say your prayers. Eat your vitamins. Yeah. So Hogan and
Hogan for me would be on that list for sure.
Yep.
Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
Wow.
Who's had some major issues off. Yeah. Let's keep it to wrestling.
Just a little murder charge.
Yeah. Snuka for me, because he literally was above the ropes.
Sure.
When a lot of guys weren't. British Bulldogs began. But he was above the ropes. So Snuka would be on mine. Macho Man Savage.
Yeah.
He's become more of a cult hero since his passing. He was a minor league baseball player and a very good.
Terrific baseball
minor
player.
Minor league baseball player. But I have a Savage shirt at home, Macho
you do?
Man Savage. Yeah,
yes.
I do.
Love
that I
Savage.
Bought at Urban Outfitters, I believe, in the last 10 years. But
you shop at Urban Outfitters? I didn't
not
see
as
that.
Much as I used
I didn't
to.
See that.
I'm a little svelte to shop there. Those clothes are meant for people a little more fashionable and thinner, we'll say. So Macho Man Savage would be on that list for me. And then as my kids got introduced to wrestling, they were like me, they were in it for like 2.5 years and then boom, disappeared. It's like Disneyland for kids.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
all go a couple times and then all of a sudden you never hear about it again.
Only the weird ones hold on to it.
Right. John Cena for me, because my kids, that he was the star when my kids got into it. Because I, in all fairness, I missed The Rock and Steve Austin. I wasn't watching wrestling during that time. I saw highlights of, you know,
sure.
Mankind, all these guys, Foley and all these crazy, but I wasn't watching during Ric Flair time. I was the gap. So when I got back to it with my kids for a couple of years, Cena was the guy.
John Cena.
So those would be mine. Who would
Cena.
Be? You can't see me.
You can't see me. John Cena's been like on top in wrestling longer than any wrestler ever.
Yeah.
He's been like 15 years.
I was
like literally
say,
15 years.
Most guys never have the run he's had.
Yeah, he loves the business. He loves the business.
So who is your four? Hurry, let's go. Come on.
Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
It doesn't matter what you think!
You could interchange Rock in there with Austin, but Andre for me has got to be there. Hulk's got to be there. Ric Flair and Austin.
If it's just Mike skills, Flair's got to be one.
He's
right?
up there. And Savage, too. I mean, Savage could work his way around a Mike. He is hilarious.
No one could do a Slim Jim commercial like
that. Oh, my God.
Do a Slim Jim.
Upside down, I'm better than you are. Yeah. All right. Have the Broncos been disrespected nationally again? Madden covers out. Did you see this? Antonio Brown gracing the cover. He is on the cover of Madden 19. He's the cover athlete. He's on there with his helmet off screaming. Von Miller's in the Madden family. Did you realize that, Troy? He has done commercials. He has an endorsement agreement with EA Sports and Microsoft. I'm a little bit surprised that Von Miller, given his stature as a star, league-wide star, has never graced the cover of Madden.
Yeah, I'm not surprised it's not this year, because Antonio Brown was arguably the best offensive player in the league last year. They typically, it's an offensive player.
Typically because, so, yep.
And Brown, by all accounts, was in the MVP conversation as a receiver. I mean, he wasn't going to win it, but he was certainly in the conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't see a lot of defensive guys. When was the last defensive player that was on the cover?
It was
Polamalu?
Richard Sherman.
Sherman?
Richard Sherman, Troy Polamalu, I believe, are the only defensive players that have ever graced the cover. Oh, no, Ray Lewis as well. Ray Lewis as well.
I don't know the answer to this, but obviously Peyton Manning should have at one point.
He's never been on the cover.
He had like three of the greatest seasons and the greatest season in NFL history when he was with the Broncos. I wonder if he asked not to be on it. And I'm just, that's total speculation on my part. But remember, for a while there, any guy that was on the cover of that thing was a curse.
Right.
Like either injury or awful season.
Yep.
So, I mean, even Peyton Hillis, he disappeared off the face of the earth. Like, he goes from Broncos, where they never played. He goes to Cleveland, and then he's on this cover, and he literally never had a significant snap in his career after that.
So true. And that was a weird one, because that was the year that Madden let the fans vote.
Yeah.
And the fans voted Peyton Hillis.
Yeah, that was an odd thing, because nothing against Hillis, he shouldn't have been on the cover of Madden.
But it's just weird to see, when you look back at all the names, Eddie George, Dante Culpepper, Marshall Faulk, Michael Vick, Ray Lewis, Donovan McNabb, Sean Alexander, Vince Young, Brett Favre, Troy Polamalu, Larry Fitzgerald, Drew Brees, Peyton Hillis, Megatron, Barry Sanders, Richard Sherman, OBJ, Gronk, Brady. There has never been a Denver Bronco on the front cover of Madden, and that seems strange.
It should have been Manning any number of years
ago. Right,
here.
No Peyton, no TD.
Again, I covered TD at the height of his fame, and I don't know, what year does that go back to? How long did
They started putting people on the cover of Madden in about 2001. Eddie George was the first one on, and TD had sort of...
I was going to say he just missed it, because he would have been a clear candidate, but his best years were 97, 98 in that range, so he might have... I was going to say, there's no way he wouldn't have been on it, because he was the MVP of the league, but it looks like he just missed the window to be the guy, because he would have been. And again, Manning, who knows? You know, there might be some contractual thing with other stuff he does in business.
Never know with him.
Who knows with Peyton?
Yeah.
But if it's just based on performance, Manning should have been on the cover.
Yeah, just a little bit strange. You take a step back and say, wow, no Broncos ever been on the cover. If it's going to be someone, it's going to be Vaughn here in the next couple years. So we'll see. He's got to put together a season like you talked about. 15 sacks, defensive player of the year. He'll find his way on.
Yeah, it's got to be that kind of year. It can't be, and they have to get back to the playoffs probably too, honestly, for him to be in that conversation.
Yep, I agree. Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Interesting question in response to all the news we found out yesterday. Who's worth what? The landscape in the NFL has never been more confusing to me, and I'll tell you exactly why when we come back. If you guys want to contribute to our conversation going off on, you know, kind of went off on a tangent on our Mount Rushmore Pro Wrestling, Troy and I. Troy, you can follow Troy at Troy Rank on Twitter. I am at Buysline. And both of us have tweeted our Mount Rushmore. We encourage you to quote tweet our tweet and give us your Mount Rushmore. And we'll keep them up and we'll follow it through the rest of the afternoon. Troy, who's worth what? The landscape in the NFL has never been more confusing to me personally. And I just want to go through it with you here. This is in reaction to two deals or non-deals, depending on how you want to look at it, from yesterday's news. The report that Steelers offered a five-year, $70 million contract to running back Le'Veon Bell. That surfaced Monday. But the report from Ian Rappaport said that only $10 million of it, the signing bonus, was the only fully guaranteed portion of the contract, which I was a little bit taken back by, considering what Le'Veon Bell has meant to the Steelers and just his production as a football player league-wide. As long as the Steelers don't rescind the franchise tag, Bell is guaranteed $14.5 million for this year. All right, but they're obviously not signing that long-term deal that Pittsburgh put in front of them. On the heels of that story, the Rams announced that wide receiver Brandon Cooks signed a five-year contract extension yesterday. We didn't know the financial terms of the deal specifically at the time, but we have since found out that, and this is again from a rap sheet on Twitter, Ian Rappaport, the Rams signed wide receiver Brandon Cooks to a five-year extension worth $81 million, $16.2 million yearly average in new money, but he gets $50 million guaranteed for injury and $20.5 million fully guaranteed at signing. You got to help me out with this, because I know they play different positions, okay? I know that. But Le'Veon Bell seems such like a unique player there's only one guy like him, really, league-wide, and it's him. He is Marshall Faulk in his prime, if you will. He's that caliber of player. And the fact that the Steelers would only give him $10 million in guaranteed money, meanwhile, Brandon Cooks, who really, you know, is a nice player. I'm not saying that he's not. But to throw a $81 million deal at Brandon Cooks, he was a 1,000-yard receiver, didn't even hit 1,100 yards, a 1,000-yard receiver this past season. But to give him $20 million guaranteed and then $50 million guaranteed for injury, I'm just not connecting it here, Troy. Help me.
I'm not either, and I hate to agree with you on this, but I do, because Sammy Watkins got paid. I don't see him as an elite receiver. He got paid. I mean, if I'm in that L.A. Rams locker room, I'm like, why are we not paying Donald? Somebody tell me why we're not paying Aaron Donald, and we just played Cooks, and he's been here for a hot minute. That sends a terrible message in the locker room, which tells me they've got to have something for Donald coming down the pipeline.
Have to.
You know, and Todd Gurley, I guarantee you, after this year, is going to hold out. There's no way he's going to do the Le'Veon Bell and say, I'm not coming to training camp. I mean, I carry the ball 350 times. I'm not going to get beat up in training camp. The thing about Le'Veon Bell that surprises me is he's one of the best receivers in the league. When you look at his production as a receiver out of the backfield.
85 receptions this past year.
I mean, he's the ultimate weapon.
That would have led the Broncos receivers.
Yeah, it led a lot of teams. I mean, the guys, and he runs really good routes. It's not just, hey, dump the ball and let him go get it. Right. He knows what he's doing. I mean, he is an accomplished receiver. It tells me that it's just another reminder of how much NFL owners and GMs hate risk and hate distraction. Because Le'Veon Bell has been in trouble. He's been a little bit of a personality at times, kind of a diva at times. I don't cover him. The few times I've been around him, I like him. I'm not going to sit here and say I know Le'Veon Bell. But that's the only way. And you look at it and go, well, he's going to be soon up to 30 and you're going to be paying him. So in the last 2 years of that contract, it's a bad deal. And I agree. There are times where you say, no, I really want to be paying him $17 million at age, 29, whatever. But sometimes in sports, when you're going for it and trying to win a championship, which the Steelers are, you have to make a decision for the now, knowing on the backside you may pay for it. Because by not paying Bell, your best offensive player, with all due respect to Ben Roethlisberger, quarterbacks are kind of their own situation. He, for me, is more talented. He's more valuable than Antonio Brown because he does both. He's a receiver and he's a great running back. To have him come to camp pissed again, upset, and now it sounds like no camp again.
Right.
And Tomlin, and then the Steelers have shown this inability to kind of win big games the last few years, and it always feels like they're on the verge of fracturing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Where guys kind of act out, and who's the one guy that team that has divas, and I put Ben Roethlisberger in with him. He is as big a diva as is in the league, frankly, in the way he assigns blame to others, that it's never been his fault. But what's the one team they can ever beat? What's the one team Mike Tomlin can't beat? Patriots. And his record against the Patriots is just an abomination. And part of it is that because they're undisciplined, and the Steelers are what works against some teams, and then against the Patriots, it all works against them? I don't know, but I would have paid Bell, because he can't take that deal at $10 million guaranteed.
No.
He's going to get $14 million on the franchise tag.
Right, right.
I mean, he can't even take that on principle alone. Even if he was bleeding black and yellow, he can't take that deal. Because other players are like, dude, what are you doing? You can't do that. It just shows that they don't value the running back position. I'm curious to see what happens to Zeke Elliott and Todd Gurley in a couple years. Because everyone wants the superstar running back. No one wants to pay him. Who's the last guy that got paid? Adrian Peterson.
Mm.
No one's got paid big money as a running back since then. And that's the dilemma that Bell's getting into, is everyone wants Le'Veon Bell. No one wants to pay that position. I mean, the Broncos, you know, again, if C.J. Anderson had stayed at $4.5 million, I think he would have the third highest salary in the league at running back. They were never going to pay that. Why? We get Royce Freeman. He's C.J. Anderson making minimum.
And typically, I subscribe to that. Typically.
But Le'Veon Bell's an outlier.
He's different.
He's an outlier. Just like Von Miller for me is an outlier.
Right.
Some guys are an aberration. Le'Veon Bell, you watch him. Does anyone else look like him in the league?
No.
Does anyone run like him?
No. And Todd Gurley, Cannon flashes, David Johnson, I got it. But Le'Veon Bell has done this. This 1,300 yards on the ground, you know, 700 yards in the air, 85 receptions, this isn't the first time. I mean, he was 75 receptions the year prior in 2016. In 2014, he's 83 receptions for nearly 900 yards. That's through the air, in addition to the nearly 1,400 yards on the ground. And it's not like the guy is 29 and looking for a deal. He's 26 and looking for a deal. This, to me, what the Steelers are doing here, and I'll say his name again, they are letting Marshall Faulk walk away in his prime. And I don't get it. And I understand the philosophy. You don't want to, you know, at that position in particular, invest or overinvest and reach. But at the same time, I got to agree with Le'Veon Bell's agent, Bakari, who said the Steelers want to pay the position and not the player. And I can't think of a better way to put that, because I think the Steelers are misplaying their hand here. I really do. He's an MVP candidate, Le'Veon Bell is. And I know he's had some hiccups along the way. But to offer him only $10 million in guaranteed money, I'm out. And the last thing that I hope, by the way, is that after this deal is done, this last franchise tag where he's going to get $14.5 million this year, and this time next year, he's 27 years old, and the Raiders come calling. And the Broncos are going to have to play him twice a year in division. That's my fear, because they're going to be looking to go in a different direction at that position, specifically after this year, you would think. Because I don't think Marshawn Lynch is going to play another year. I don't think he should be playing this year. It's just interesting. And then the relationship between that and paying a guy like Sammy Watkins 3 years, $48 million with $30 million guaranteed. $30 million guaranteed for Sammy Watkins.
I don't get that contract. I mean, he has been living off the word potential for how many years? And Brandon Cooks, he's a nice player. He's a nice player. But again, for the Rams to pay him before that Donald deal was done, I was surprised. Because Aaron Donald, for me, is the best defensive player in the league right now.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, he is a disruptive force on a team that's thinking Super Bowl. Why are you angering him? Why would you? I mean, again, I get Cooks probably said, "Hey, okay, I'll take it."
Yeah.
What do you sign?
Yeah, why not?
I don't blame Cooks.
No,
always get the money. I'm just saying, for me, if I'm the Rams, that just sent a very odd message to a locker room that already has Talib in it, Peters in it, Donald in it. Gurley's going to want to get paid. I mean, that's a lot of volatility. And who's the first guy you pay out of that?
Brandon Cooks,
who's caught zero passes for you. The sequencing didn't make any sense. I've got to get Aaron Donald taken care of. For me, that's priority 1, 2, and 3.
Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Troy, perhaps the last big domino has fallen in the NBA. How has the landscape of the Western Conference changed, and how does it directly affect the Nuggets? We'll get to it next. Perhaps the last domino has fallen in the NBA, Troy. Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. How has the landscape of the West changed, and how will it affect the Nuggets? Huge, huge news. We've been waiting for this for a couple weeks since we knew that it was going to happen. From Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, Spurs have agreed to trade Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green to Toronto for DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a protected 2019 first-round pick, league sources tell ESPN. A call with the league office is starting shortly. And that was earlier this morning. Presumably, that's already done. What do you make of this? Kawhi Leonard did not end up in Los Angeles. He is going to be a Toronto Raptor.
Is he? I wonder if they're going to try to flip him. Now, again, this trade makes sense for Toronto. I'll take that side, which is the lesser talked about side on this. They had to change something. They had a coach of the year. They became a great regular season team, and then they just got boat raced in the playoffs. They just cannot get out of their own way. So they needed to find a way to kind of hit the reset button while still in their window. And you bring back Kawhi Leonard, and you're like, okay, we got he and Kyle Lowry. You got a chance. I like that idea. And if you're the Spurs, you get DeMar DeRozan, who's a legitimate top, whatever, 25, 30 player.
Yeah, no, he is a star.
He's the star player. However you grade him, he's a star player. And I'm sure he'll fit in nicely with the Spurs. He's not crazy about being traded, but he's going to the Spurs where they have 5 titles in how many years. But every report I've seen from people who are clearly in the know say Kawhi Leonard has no interest in playing in Toronto. So what do you do if you're the Raptors? Because like you're bringing him into the window to say, we're going to win now. You're our guy, even if it's for a year. And he's already saying he didn't want to be there. Normally I'd say, well, you wait it out. What's his leverage? you know, what are they going to do? Well, he just basically sat out all of last season over a squabble with the Spurs. So he's shown that kind of resolve. Most athletes, you could kind of call their bluff. At the end of the day, they're like, you know what, I got to get on the court. And I think he does too. He can't basically sit out back-to-back years. But would I be surprised, because I think it's a 60-day window from when you acquire a player, you
right.
can trade him
yep.
again. If I'm the Lakers and I'm Magic Johnson, I am quietly getting aggressive behind the scenes to see what would it take. Because the Spurs were never going to trade him to L.A. unless they basically said, here's Ingram, here's Kuzma,
they'd have to give
here's
him
every draft
yep.
pick.
Yep.
I mean, and by that point, if you get Kawhi, what do you have left? So I never saw Spurs-Lakers deal, even though it made a lot of sense for the Lakers. It made no sense for the Spurs. Why would they trade him in the West? And Buford and the GM from the Maasai are, I think, best friends or great friends working on some documentary on basketball in Africa together. So there was a lot of connections that made it sound like this would make sense for him to go to the Raptors. But the problem is, if he doesn't want to be there, what do? Do you flip him? Do you flip him? Do you get after 60 or let's say 45 days into this and realize, oh no, he's not going to report. He doesn't want to be here. Then the Lakers have to be approaching it that way in their mind. Because I think you could give up Ingram and a first rounder to Toronto or even a Josh Hart and get Kawhi. Whereas the Spurs were wanting everybody. They want every guy you got. And I think you could get at that point, then if you're the Raptors, you're rebuilding. So would you take that package?
I think they have to consider it because here's the way I look at this, Troy. This is the biggest gamble I've seen in the NBA in quite some time. The Raptors are really rolling the dice here. They just traded away the best player in franchise history.
Right.
DeMar DeRozan is the best player the Raptors have ever had. Okay? It's not Vince Carter. DeMar DeRozan has had more personal success than Vince Carter had in a Raptors uniform, and they've had far more team success than Vince Carter in a Raptors uniform. So he is the all-time leading scorer in the history of the organization, and they have now moved him for a rental player in a very short window of time that they are hoping, that, and Maasai and the rest of the Raptors organization is hoping that it'll be, they'll have an inroad to sell him, much like Oklahoma City did with Paul George, that they make this trade for Paul George, and on the surface, it looked like a rental. Going in, really, a direct parallel with Kawhi Leonard, because Paul George is from California, he's from Los Angeles, and made it clear that he wants to be a Laker.
Then all of a sudden, when the Kawhi Leonard rumors popped up that Kawhi could go to the Lakers, what happened? Radio silence, and all. It was like, Paul George might go back to Oklahoma City. He didn't want to be a third wheel.
Well,
I think the Clippers are the team to watch out for Kawhi, because Jerry West is involved, and they're going to use, as crazy as it sounds, I could see him using LeBron against it, saying, Kawhi, if you go there, you'll never be the star. It's LeBron's team. It's whomever he wants coaching. He's running the show, even at 37, whatever. He'll be running the show. So I think the Clippers would be like, hey, you come to us. You want to be in L.A.? That's his dream, to play in L.A. I mean, you'd think Lakers, but the Clippers would be like, you're our guy. You would be on the side of our building. You would be that. You'll never be that with the Lakers. But you're right. The risk is enormous here.
It's
if
monstrous.
He doesn't want to come. Again, 2 years ago, every team would have lined up for Kawhi Leonard. Him, no matter the circumstances, I don't know exactly what to believe. I know when I hear stories of Ginobili and Parker going to him and saying, hey, we've seen you working out. We need you to play down the stretch. And he essentially said, no, that's odd. Because he had some kind of relationship with those guys.
And then there became a disconnect because Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker said into a microphone what he said was, I've had an injury that was worse and played with it. And that, from that point
there was
on,
a fracture.
From everything that I have read and heard on these different podcasts like The Low Post and others like it, ever since that comment was made, the fracture is the perfect word. It was a complete disconnect, and Kawhi Leonard said out loud at a certain point in time, not into a microphone, but said out loud, I'm not stepping back into the Spurs locker room.
Yeah.
So Toronto...
But it scared off suitors. It scared off some teams. And he appears as a rental. But again, even as a rental, you would have thought there'd be 15, 18 teams involved. And there really are only four or five.
That's it. That's
Celtics,
it.
Sixers,
maybe, right.
Lakers, Raptors. You know, again, and the Raptors are taking an enormous risk here. Again, if he wanted to be there, I love this deal for them. Yeah, I love the fact, hey, reinvent ourselves, go for it.
Sure.
But if he doesn't want to be there, and he's a silent cat, like he's a different personality.
He really is, yeah.
You know, and how do you warm him up to it? I don't know the answers to that. I just know that it's a risk. And what does it mean for the Nuggets, all this? Kawhi not going to the Lakers helps the Nuggets, I'll say that. Because if he goes to the Lakers, they're probably viewed as the number two team in the West.
Yeah, that's the way I would certainly view them. So let's talk about that. You know, who have the Nuggets jumped this offseason? Have they jumped Golden State? Absolutely not. Houston is interesting. Now, I don't think the Nuggets will have a better record than Houston, but Houston's interesting just to isolate them. They've lost Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza is to the Rockets what Andre Iguodala is for the Warriors. They're not the same team without him. So that's going to be interesting. That's a very underrated move. But I'm expecting the Denver Nuggets to leapfrog Portland this season. I think Portland takes a legitimate step back, and I believe that they will leapfrog New Orleans, who lost Boogie Cousins. I know they played better without Boogie down the stretch, but it's less about what New Orleans or Portland has done and more about who the Nuggets are turning into. I believe, Troy, you tell me if you think I'm crazy. I think the Nuggets have potential to win 52 games this season and host a first-round playoff series. Do you think I'm too optimistic?
On the surface, no. I'm just not sure this Will Barton as a starter. I preferred him as a bench guy. I didn't like the idea of bringing him back, because I think when I was told by, I think Paul Klee knows way more about the NBA, and he and I were talking about it at a Rockies game the other day, is, you know, you like Barton, but it seemed like they promised him to start based on the contract.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
I liked him better as a guy coming off the bench. And now you bring Isaiah Thomas to the mix. I like Isaiah Thomas. How does he fit? Is he going to be Vinny Johnson microwave coming in to score, or is he going to take minutes away from Jamal Murray? Who on this team is going to play defense? I mean, that's another issue. But I believe they should. I believe they're going to. I don't see 52, but I do believe they get to the playoffs, whatever that number is. They should be in the playoffs this year. So is that 47? Is it 48? I don't know what the number is. They should have been in the playoffs last year, if not for that atrocious loss to Memphis at the end of the season. This really sabotaged them as those games became more significant. But here's the weird thing. I think you brought it up the other day. They could have been a 3 seed. I mean, the difference between like the 9 and the 3 was what, 3 games?
3 total games.
So, I mean, the idea the Nuggets could get hot at the right time, sneak a few they're not supposed to. I mean, who knows? Who knows? Because the Lakers on the paper for me right now appear like a middle-of-the-pack 6-type seed.
Really?
I don't know. How are they going to win 52 games with, they have like 3 dudes?
Well.
And I love LeBron James. I'm a LeBron James fan.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to tip the scales. If you ask me, he's going to tip the scales a great deal. But the Lakers have just done an incredible job with drafting. They really have. Josh Hart, MVP of the Summer League. They got Brandon Ingram. They have Lonzo Ball, who I think you and I have talked about this. They had Lonzo Ball played in the last 6 games in the year instead of shutting him down. Lonzo Ball at 19 years old is top 10 in the NBA in steals and assists.
Yeah, I like him way more than most.
But he
needs the ball in his hands. Is LeBron? I guess that's my issue. Is LeBron going to cede the fact that he's not going to have the ball in his hands all the time? Because if he does, you take one of your best assets in Lonzo Ball and basically mute his effectiveness. Because he's a point guard. He's not a spot-up shooter. Lonzo does not shoot well. He's a good player, but he's not a spot-up shooter. He's not a guy that's going to run around off picks and shoot. He's a guy who's a creator.
He is.
And if LeBron's going to have the ball all the time, now you take one of your best assets and mute him. So Ingram showed a lot to me last year. He really improved. He needs to still put on more weight and strength. And Kuzma's a scorer. Kuzma's going to benefit from LeBron as much as anyone because he's going to get more open looks. But I don't know. I got to see how they fit. I would never doubt LeBron. And again, even when I say, let's say they finish 5th or 6th in the West, would I be surprised if they got to the Western Conference Finals with LeBron? I would not. And I think he knows that at this point in his career. Just get me into the playoffs, boys, and I'll get you.
We'll figure it out.
We'll get to the finish line. I don't know that the seed matters, other than you don't want to face Golden State round one. Other than that, I think LeBron is so confident, whether they're a 2 or they're a 7, he probably feels he could get them to the Western Conference Finals.
And something tells me their roster as it's constructed right now is not the final draft. There's another move to be made in a trade, I believe, from Magic Johnson. I just don't see this roster as it's constructed being their day one, game one roster. we'll wait and see. Because I just don't think Magic's done working.
Well, the Warriors are still favored. There's an interview now out with DeMarcus Cousins when he asked, what do you think about people's negative reaction to him joining the Warriors? And it was, I don't give a...
Did it start with an S or an F?
An F.
Okay.
He said,
sounds
I know,
like Boogie.
I know you blanks out there are ripping your hair out about this, and I love it. Oh. It gives them a chance, honestly, to rest guys for like a week at a time and just run a half-court offense if they wanted to for a week. I mean, who has that luxury? They set Steph for long periods of time last year over an injury, but also trying to, you know, keep him from playing X amount of minutes. But you could literally go to DeMarcus Cousins for a week to 2 weeks and say, we're just going to do low post game.
Well, the one thing that the Warriors never had this whole time was a scoring center, and now they have one. It's really fascinating.
It's a little obnoxious.
Yeah,
it's a little obnoxious.
It is, and I think if you got Adam Silver a couple of drinks in him behind closed doors, I think he'd tell you the same thing. That's just me personally. The ESPYs are tonight. Case Keenum up for a big award. Tell you what it is, as well as who he's up against. But first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?